Are you curious about how AI is revolutionizing the world of translation and localization? If yes, this episode 82 of Extra AI might be of interest for you. And I hope you have started liking our video podcast, which we have started in the last episode 81. So going forward, we are trying to do as many video podcasts as possible. And this is your host, Raghu Bhatt. So in this episode 82 of Extra AI, we are delving into the fascinating subject of localization and web translation or translation as such, and how you can use AI services or AI in the context of doing translation. And I have invited a guest, Stephen Tyler, who is the Chief Product and Technology Officer at MotionPoint. Stephen brings with him extensive expertise where we will explore how managed translation platforms from MotionPoint can help uncover with AI not just transforming but also enhancing the efficiency and the accuracy of translation services. So in this episode, we promise to bring some additional aspects of comprehensive look into the mechanisms of AI-driven translation and the impact it has on global communication and the business practices. Join us in this engaging session and let us together discover the future of translation powered by AI and gain some valuable insights into how technology can be used to cross these language barriers and connect the world in many unprecedented ways. As always, you'll find much more information at the end of the podcast. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this podcast conversation. All right, welcome back. This is Extra AI, a podcast series on AI and machine learning applications. And today, we have an interesting topic in the space of AI-driven web translation. We'll be talking about MotionPoint. And here, I have with me Stephen Tyler. Welcome on board, Stephen. Can you say a few words about yourself, about maybe your how you are connected with AI and how you have been your journey maybe?
Sure. So first of all, it's great to be here, Raghu, and joining on this podcast series on these interesting set of topics that you take. So I'm 32 years in the tech industry, and I started off as a developer. Somewhere along the line, I did an MBA, did some senior roles in software engineering management and product management. And it sort of landed up with me after about 13 years in a large enterprise IT management software company. Then leaving there and doing a few executive roles in sort of growth equity funded companies. One of them was a GovTech company doing SaaS software for state and local government, and then most recently as the Chief Product Technology Officer at MotionPoint, which is a website localization company, as you mentioned in your intro. And candidly, over the years, there was machine learning, data science in various applications all over the place, which then just totally exploded, as we all know, with the LLM birth into the world that happened with OpenAI into the general consciousness. So for me, I wasn't heavily involved in a lot of that until just before I joined MotionPoint, and I was looking at this industry and realizing how centrally important AI technologies and NLP was going to be to how translation gets done, and how it gets not only done as a core job of translating X to Y, but also the whole optimization of the process around that to get the best return on investment at scale on translation. So I dug pretty deep into it before I joined here, self-educating myself with the sort of Stanford courses that are on YouTube that I'd recommend to anybody to go through if you've got a stomach for the maths, and got really up to speed on all the sort of core principles of ML and deep learning, and specifically NLP, which is the area that's most resonant for translation tech. So yeah, and then that, we'll talk about some of the things we've done at MotionPoint, but that's how I kind of came to this.
Sure. Amazing. Amazing to know that, Stefan. Before we take a break and come back into the real meat of the conversation for today, Maybe I have one other question, right? Like, I know a lot is happening now in the space of AI, and with the inception of generative AI, which I would say, I think one gentleman termed it like, if machine learning is the back end, generative AI is the front office of everything, right? In this way, people, normal people, ordinary folks are also now made aware of what is happening out there and what are the beautiful things that can happen with generative AI. So with all this lot of advancements happening, and in your field of website translation, what kind of impact do you see?
Of generative AI specifically?
Yeah.
So it's interesting, and we'll probably get into this in deeper, but the underlying technology of GPT and what have you, which was transformer models, was an evolution that I think most people are familiar with, came out around 2016 out of Google. And it was that model of transformers, the famous attention is all you need paper, was specifically around translation. It came out of Google Translate, and it got deployed commercially in 2016 in Google Translate and massively stepped up the quality of translations as we started all moved away from what used to be called statistical machine translation and what subsequently has been referred to as neural machine translation, or NMT. And that quality step up was massive. It really changed the game from machine translation being an interesting curiosity to being something that could actually go mainstream and actually deliver meaningful value if used in a right way. So then when generative AI comes along, which is a sort of massive explosion of that transformer model, training it with much larger data sets, a less constrained problem space, and just trying to say, instead of translate X to Y, take any given prompt and produce the right answer. It was a big step up in the technology. There was also a lot of, a variation on a theme you're already familiar with in the translation industry. So we did a lot of, like everybody did, looking at, well, is this actually better for translation than NMTs? The answer to that was no, but primarily because it could get close in quality but a much higher cost and slower. So the NMT technology kind of stayed as the primary way to do translation, which is still generative AI. It was just a 2016 version of generative AI. But these LLMs have really sort of opened up other use cases that are super interesting for doing automated. We'll talk about a bunch of them later, but automating aspects of what is done in post-editing, automating certain aspects of source content cleaning prior to translation. There's a whole bunch of different use cases up and down the process around translation where LLMs can do things that we just couldn't do before. So it's had an impact, but the big impact in the translation industry of transformer tech was really 2016, not 2022.
Beautiful. Amazing. Well, let's take a quick break, come back, and then get into our real conversation today.
So,
all right, welcome back. So let's now get into the real conversation then of our today's topic about AI-driven website translation. I know you as you might have mentioned that you interact a lot with different businesses, and you see that whether it is the enterprise businesses, the consumer businesses, you see AI is transforming a lot. But what are the roles of AI, ML, or even the human translation? So if you can explain about your thoughts about how you see AI is transforming these enterprises and businesses, or consumer businesses, but also see the role of AI and ML in the context of human translation, like human language translation. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, and it's important to kind of look at it that way, because until any of this tech came along, human translation was just how it was. That was just translation meant human translation. So everything is a question really of how do I optimize that process? Where is it I can apply AI ML techniques and capabilities to try to apply to certain parts of the process or all of it that was previously being done by humans? And the way this actually works today is very hybrid. The machine translation is used alongside professional linguists. And then exactly how that's used and how those capabilities are combined is context dependent. So it depends on the context and really the importance of quality given the content you're dealing with. So One thing I'll just say is that, you know, machine translation is now getting very good. I mean, we all have a sort of experience using Google Translate on vacation, so we all have a feeling that it's good, especially in the high resource languages. However, when you look at it in a professional context, when you there's a workflow that sort of evolved that's called MTPE, which is machine translation with post-edit, the post-edit being a human linguist reviewing what the machine translation produced and saying either, yep, that's fine, that can go, or editing it and fixing it up before it's published. And the data from that is interesting because you see now that the machine translation is good enough that you're getting 40 to 60% of the translations that are being produced by machine are getting approved by the linguists without making any changes. So that in itself is telling you the machine translation is actually getting pretty decent. So as a result of that, the real question becomes, okay, so fine, but how bad are the worst translations?
Right.
How bad would it be if those make it to production? And sort of how much are you prepared to spend to mitigate or eliminate that risk? So the way I think about it is it's a cost-risk trade-off. It's context and content dependent about where how you would answer that. So the state of the union with this right now is the industry broadly went from everything's human to machine translation came in, but mostly being used with MTPE workflow where humans are still reviewing. The net effect of that shift is taking probably 15% out of the cost of translation at enterprise scale. Which is, I think, an odd dichotomy between the two statements I've just made. One is 60% is good enough to use without a human looking at it, but we've only got a 15% saving. So there is a lot of unrealized potential value still here in this space. We should be able to drive this down. The trick, obviously, is figuring out which 60% are good enough without having a human look at it, and we'll talk about that use case a bit later, because that's an area where we're a motion point heavily invested in on the AI research space. But so broadly, that industry shift, MTPE, some people are starting to use MT only for parts of their websites that are less critical, where they have more risk tolerance. Some folks will use MT entirely for certain markets where they have more risk tolerance. It just depends on the context, but ultimately it boils down to quality, context, how much you're prepared to spend to mitigate the risk of something bad getting out.
Beautiful, beautiful. So when we talk about translation, I think maybe for the common man, the first thing that comes up is about the Google Translate, right? And the Google translation. Because anybody, I think today, at least now onto the inception of generative AI, people obviously go into Google Translate to do a lot of this translation. But why do you think Google Translate is not good enough, or is it not there? And what are the things that typical challenges that people are facing, and you see that Google Translate couldn't handle that, or maybe not in the better way?
Yeah, so in the interest of being fair to their competitors, you have Google Translate, Microsoft Translator, Amazon Translate, DeepL, all the sort of people that do what I call generic machine translation. Mm-hmm. And by generic, I mean not specific to your business and the language used in your business. It's sort of generally good. It produces fluent, accurate, mostly fluent and accurate translations. And if that is all you need, it may very well be good enough for you. However, most brands are much more sensitive about their brand voice. They have style guides. They have glossaries. I was just dealing this morning with a brand that has a glossary of 9,000 terms in it that we're working to optimize. And also lists of what they call non-translatables. So if you see this word, it should stay untranslated. You should never translate this. A great example is there's a fashion brand out of the UK that we work with who has a sub-brand called Monsoon, and they never want that translated. So if you put that through Google Translate, it will translate it, and it shouldn't. So there's style guide adherence, glossaries, non-translatables. Right. There's generally brand voice, which has to do with tone of voice, as well as, you know, just rules around what kind of, you know, language you use and how you formulate sentences. So what we will do is we actually train custom NMT models, and we train them using translation memory data. So once you've translated a lot of strings, we have a lot of examples of your grand voice in our translation memories, and we can use that data to train custom NMT models that speak with your grand voice, which produces a higher quality translation. And that's no disrespect to Google Translate, it's just we're training it on data that is more like the data you want it to produce. Another one would be PII. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we do is, we might talk about this later, but a sort of odd non-translation AI use case we have is spotting PII that comes in, because we make sure that doesn't enter our system and it just gets left alone and not touched. We don't store it, we don't process it, it just doesn't come in. So okay. If you're just going to take everything off your...
Can you elaborate PII for the audience?
Yeah, sorry. So personally identifiable information. So sensitive information that shouldn't be brought in and stored or processed necessarily. And so, you know, if you're going to just go and hook your website straight up to something that's going to talk to Google Translate and you don't do that processing, you're going to end up sharing potentially sensitive information with, you know, your favorite big tech firm. You may not want to do that. So there's a whole bunch of reasons why just hooking up to those generic engines isn't necessarily, and that would also apply not just to those services produced by big tech, but also open source models that do similar things. It's like, where is your data going and control of that flow is another area where it makes sense to look at other approaches.
Okay, beautiful. So in this context, I think maybe I would want to come up with this question. So we see that, and we kind of see that the marketers have to use a website translation service, and you talk about what are the benefits there. Can you provide a brief overview about MotionPoint? Because this is where I think you folks are coming in from, and who are your users, and what is the mission statement, and other things like at a high level, what is the mission statement, and what are the users, and what do you
take? Yeah, so I think the starting point for that is just to make the statement that website localization is hard.
Right.
It's however hard you think it is, double it. it's a very complex thing to try to do. And once you get beyond the level of, well, I just want to translate this sentence into French, once you get into, okay, but this occurs in different contexts and this is dynamically created by some, or this content's actually not even in the HTML, it's produced dynamically in some JavaScript framework that got bundled. But I mean, there's a lot of complexity in websites. So actually doing this well end-to-end is very hard. So I think the first thing when you think about, you know, why does it make sense to consider using a managed service like us? I mean, you certainly can do it. There are self-service applications out there that you can go and provision and do this yourself and manage it yourself. It's just that most brands want to do that if they have a sort of any sort of size and complexity in their site or any kind of high rate of change. It will be very, very difficult to actually competently manage that site. And so it makes sense to use a managed service where we specialize in this. We've been doing it for 20 years. We know what we're doing. So if I think about sort of breaking down why it's hard, so I'd say really there's three areas. One is when content changes, detecting it. So there's new English appeared on the origin site. As I say, we're translating from English to Spanish for sake of argument. Some new English showed up on the origin site. So I now need to spot that. So what will happen in our technology is we have a proxy server that is deployed that exposes the translated site. It pulls the content from the origin. It says, it looks up all the translations and serves up the translated version. If it sees stuff it doesn't know how to translate, it will queue it for translation. And that comes through our translation workflow. So the first bit of that is just detecting that there's something new. And that can be very hard because, as I said, it can be in the HTML and very easy to see. But it can also be something that's in a JSON file that was dynamically loaded. I don't want to be too technical, but a website can load up. It makes a call back to a server through an API, pulls a JSON file, it's got some data into it, and it processes it, it comes up with a string and pushes it into the browser dynamically. It's very hard to see and spot that content. And most of the sort of services like us that deal with this problem have internal processes that we use to try to detect that. And then we have configuration of our proxy that will actually deal with it. One of the things that we have invested in to differentiate there is automation of that process. So we have a lot of advanced tech that we deploy that watches the behavior of your site, both on the server and on the front end, and will compare and contrast what it sees to detect that content more quickly. And it sounds like a very techie, complicated use case, but believe me, it happens an awful lot and it's a very hard problem to solve for. So it's an area where coming to a service like us, where we live and breathe these sorts of problems, is actually high value. And the second one would be optimization of the translation costs. So one of the things that we don't do, we do not take every stream we see and send it out for translation and bill you. We review what comes in for a few different things, and we will optimize what comes in the queues. And what I mean by optimization is we change things like segmentation rules and approaches, which is how text gets broken up into chunks to be translated. How you do that can affect the cost of translation and the ability to reuse previously done translations to reduce that cost, as can a process we call algorithmic translation, which is essentially taking, there's a with dynamic websites that have sort of application backends, they will do a lot of having these sort of templated strings. Like, for instance, you might say, like, hi Ragu, your local store is, you know, Fremont, California, whatever it may be. And the Ragu and the Fremont, California are variable replacements, but the rest of the string never changes, whether it's Ragu or Steve that logs in. And so we will spot those templates. We will optimize how we process it so that we don't charge you for every variation on the theme. We just translate the template and it actually can radically reduce the cost of translation. So that second thing is optimizing the content. The third thing is then when we actually execute the translation is the quality of the output. And we have a few things that we do to optimize for that. One is in the tech that we've been talking about, just having better quality machine translation and obviously QA processes that we wrap around it. But another is that we have our own tooling that we develop specifically for website localization, where when the linguists do the translation, they're actually seeing everything they're translated in full context of the website. So they're not like working through a CSV and an Excel sheet. They're seeing it fully in context. And when they have that context, they can produce higher quality translations that are more fit for purpose than other approaches. So if you add all that up, that's kind of why a managed service makes some sense, because there's a lot of complexity in doing this well.
Beautiful. I think all the three points I think are very well articulated, like starting with the dynamically changing content to the optimization of the cost. When you have mentioned that you might have a lot of cost that could be realistically saved in a huge website, and then obviously the services, right? I think that.
Just to follow up and give you another example on that, like we have some customers, including like a one tier one telco, where that processing that we do saves them north of 90% of what would otherwise be translation cost. Like it's not a small optimization in many cases.
So you are you said that MotionPoint is available as a managed services platform, which means could you elaborate a bit more on that? Like, meaning you have the complete translation taken care by MotionPoint with your data centers or with your services folks out there, or is it also available as a SaaS solution as well, or is it going to be?
No, it's a managed service. So we provide a concierge service. You want a translated experience, you engage us, the end, magic happens. And so we will take care of everything from detecting, translating, managing the quality of what's on that site. We don't expose our tooling for self-service usage. It's not our target. I mean, obviously there are plenty of solutions in the market that do that. So if you're a large enterprise, many large enterprises will have an internal dedicated localization team that will use technology like a TMS or a translation management system and sort of self-manage that and then manage vendor relationships with LSPs. We don't serve that market. We sell primarily not to them, but to marketing, and as a concierge turnkey end-to-end service.
So I think one other follow-up question, I think I believe we did not elaborate a bit on that, about the user base for you. Who are your target users or your target customers for using your service?
Yeah, so our target customers, well, I mean, we have customers across a very broad range of industry verticals and both B2B and B2C marketing. So we have a number of the top, like household name, online fashion retailers, travel providers that do B2C direct, that you absolutely recognize all their names. Tier one telcos, we have several of those. We also have a lot of B2B manufacturing sites, and then regulated industry vertical is strong for us. So that would be the financial services and healthcare. And those are interesting because those are a very good fit for us because they're very sensitive to translation quality, which is one of our differentiating points. And they also tend to have things like customer portals on their websites that are behind a login. And we can handle that kind of scenario well. That's the sort of picture of our customer base. As I said earlier, like where we come into our own versus the sort of maybe the lower end solutions that you can sort of engage with cheaply and quickly and get going with quickly, is when you get into the use cases that come around complex site architectures, high rate of change of content, complexity in how you want to handle the content and how much configurability you need for saying, for instance, I want my homepage human translated, but my product catalog pages can be done with machine translation, or I want them in human for these markets, but in machine for these markets, all that configurability. We have those sort of points of differentiation, a lot of fine grained control over all of that. I mean, users is our own services folks who use our technology to deliver that service. But I think you meant customers.
I mean the customers, obviously. And your service, I think, like you mentioned, I think predominantly it's North America based, or is it outside available globally? And what are the different geographies and maybe the translation services as well? Is it any particular translation segment market, or is it across the globe? Do you want to talk a bit about that?
So I would say the majority of our customer base is North America, and we do, the heaviest translation pair we do is English to Spanish and for North America brands. But we also have a good number of global brands that we work with. Our largest customers, we actually work for them going into over 30 markets that we translate into for them. I would say the majority is North America, translating into Spanish and or Canadian French. And then there's a smaller group that we do a larger number of languages and target markets for. And some of those are Europe-based, so it's not entirely North America, but the majority of our customer base is North America.
Beautiful. Since you have been in this space for a little over 20 years, and now with the inception of these technologies like generative AI and other things, maybe I think it might be even easier for you guys to expand into the other geographies and other markets with these kind of translation services. Any thoughts around that? Meaning with the AI tools that you have available?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I think the big thing that AI brought along, and as I said, it's at the end of the day, it comes down to a cost risk trade-off thing. So if you can get to the point where you're prepared to take a little risk to save a lot of cost, with the use of machine translation in parts or all of your site, that frees up cash to be deployed into going into additional markets. So for our customers, it's a leverage on how many markets they can operate in the same budget. For us, what you're saying is true to a point. There are also some counter headwinds to that, in that the European market is very saturated with localization industry vendors and people doing this. And it's also a different regulatory environment and other things. So we do operate there. It's just it's not an, an area where I think we're going to probably see massive growth for us. I mean, our interest, to be honest, is in broadening out from website localization more into other forms of multilingual marketing content. So as we're looking to evolve our company, it will be in that direction more than in a sort of expansion of localization. We're more vertically up the value chain in marketing and to other forms of content and how you start to deal with optimizing for multilingual content strategies and lifecycle automation more broadly than just the web content.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great opportunity because especially if you start thinking about where the opportunity is in the application of AI and data science to not only automate the process of writing content or generating content, A/B testing content at scale and optimizing for performance, but starting to get the performance feedback metrics into training models that will help you determine what is the right content to write in the first place. What should I write in order to achieve topical authority in a given area? There's a lot of areas there where I think there's a lot of AI use cases that are not realized yet in the industry at large. So, yeah.
Okay, beautiful. So I think this is where, I know you have been in this space for quite some time and you know the risks and the pitfalls. So I'm pretty sure your solutions have progressed in such a way that you have built much more effective solutions. But how do you measure the effectiveness of your solutions? I think when you started talking about the translation services, you said that most of the time, 40 to 50% of the things are translated well and the other 50 to 60%, not so much. But with the inception of MotionPoint kind of translation services out there, you are trying to reach to the bigger, you're trying to address or maybe getting closer to that 70 or 80% mark. But how do you measure that effectiveness for any particular things that you do?
Yeah, so that's a great segue. So we, to an area that I think is an emerging tech area within translation. So we talked a lot about the actual job of translating X to Y. But, you know, coming back to that problem of, okay, once you've done that, we're doing it well enough that at least half of it is good to go. But we're only seeing a 15% reduction in cost. How do we square this? Like, shouldn't we be seeing a 50% reduction in cost? There's clearly a lot of potential there. So the key to unlock that is you need to be able to figure out which 50% are good enough to go. So there's this emerging area of it's referred to as AIQE or quality estimation. And these are very confusing terms in the industry because they talk about quality evaluation and quality estimation. They mean totally different things. So quality estimation is specifically being able to score the quality of a translation that was produced by a machine translation engine without reference translations. So there are ways in which you do evaluation of models using reference data, like typical supervised learning. You'll have your training set and you'll reserve 15% for testing. You'll train with the rest, and then you use the 15% as your reference to test the model. And that way of doing an evaluation of a model is fine. That's been around for a long time. But this quality estimation, which says, I'm going to take a translation produced by a model without reference translations, I'm going to score it and say, how good is this? That's a very hard space and a very interesting and emerging space and one we've been working in. And why is it important? One is, A, to do what you just said, measure the effectiveness of how well we're training the machine translation, which itself leads into the more important conversation of, should I trust it for this type of content now?
Right.
But more importantly, and I think this is the really big thing that we're trying to get going here, is if I can say, okay, this has a score of 85, and we set a threshold that says anything above 84.5, good enough, it can go, we won't bother human reviewing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can do that, we can start to say, I'm going to be dynamic in the workflow. So I'm not going to make you choose whether you want MT or MTPE. I'm going to ask you to set the threshold for where you want the quality. And then I'll decide whether we bother with the PE or not, depending on the QE score and the threshold. So then the question with that is, okay, so how good is it? How reliable is that? And what's the false positives and the false negative rates? And like, if you deploy something like that, how often is it really wrong? And it just turns out, it's really interesting. We've done a lot of research in this area that where we've done various AI QE models and then done correlation tests with how they scored translations versus getting professional linguists to score the translations. And it's interesting because the correlation coefficients are relatively, you look at it and think, well, it's okay. It's not, it doesn't blow you away. But once you start looking at it and saying, if I set the threshold here, how many would it actually skip the post-edit for? And how many would it do that it shouldn't have done? And the answer there is it doesn't have false positives very often, and it saves you probably 20-25%. So there is a technology leap here where I think we can go from having MT giving you that sort of 10-15% improvement that we've seen so far to probably unlocking the next 25-30% of cost savings with dynamic workflow driven by AI-driven quality estimates of translations done by machine translation models. There's a lot of other little things around the edges of that that you can use to try to optimize and tweak and get that up over time. But I think that's a super interesting place and a way to evaluate the effectiveness of the AI model somewhat quantitatively. You know, beyond that, I mean, obviously at a service provider, we have service SLAs for things like translation turnaround times and quality and site up time and things like that. But, you know, the bit that I think you're interested in around the effectiveness of the AI, I think that's probably the way to think about it. And it's a super interesting emerging space. There's a few people in the industry that are sort of leading the charge on this, and we're one of them.
True. Completely agree, echo your thoughts on that. I think this is going to be a super engaging and emerging space because this is where I think things are now evolving. Nat, I know we are having some beautiful conversation. I think now comes to the point of the important question, or the million dollar question that I ask, the extra AI question. How do you, I know there's a lot of competition out there. The market is huge, evolving. How do you differentiate yourself from the competition? Is there one particular unique factor, or a unique word or a unique sentence, whatever you could differentiate yourself?
I think if it boils down to one word, it's concierge. It's like that we do everything end to end and you just don't have to worry about it. If you drill down one level below that, it's high quality translations. It's the fact that we're deploying the leading edge tech in AI, but not just AI, everywhere we can to try to optimize translation cost and maximize ROI and help you stretch, you know, your localization budget as far as possible. And then it's differentiated capabilities, like our ability to very, very quickly detect content, even if it is deeply embedded inside some JavaScript, inside an HTML tag, inside JSON. We will find that and we will detect it and deal with it. So we have a lot of differentiating the tech capabilities in the service level. But at the end of the day, it just boils down to you don't have to worry about it. We just do it for you. It's an easy button for website translation.
Any interesting thoughts that you would like to, or any interesting AI innovations that you would are realistically following and focusing on how it can improve or improvise your translation service?
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, for us, obviously, we've talked this whole hour about text, really. Like, how do I translate a sentence or a short block of copy? I think as we're looking as increasingly at a broader range of content, and we already handle images and image translation, but we don't handle it in a particularly leading edge way. But I think there is some really interesting technology in that area. And as we're starting to broaden our vision to, you know, other forms of content, and we're starting, if you take an example of you know, if I have a digital ad, it's got a background layer, it's got some text, it's got a call to action button. Well, how do I market adapt that in as automated way as possible? The text translation is easy. We got that one sorted. But what if that image is, it was done for the US and the background images of the Super Bowl, and now I want to go to, Canada, I want to go to, or I want to go to England, where, nobody is prepared to acknowledge the existence of American football as a thing. You want to change that image to something culturally resonant. And so how do I automate the process? Do I have to have a human being sit there and say, oh, no, we should really use Liverpool Man City as a backdrop for this? No. If you can get to the point where you say, okay, well, that background was actually generated itself by Midjourney, and mm-hmm. that was generated from a prompt, and that was a prompt that was created by an LLM,
mm-hmm.
well, now I can sort of automate using an LLM to rewrite the prompt to culturally adapt for the UK, and then run that prompt through Midjourney, take that image and swap that in. I can do some really interesting things, I think, in terms of automating processes that are otherwise laborious, repetitive tasks. I think so those areas, I mean, that's just one example, but I think there's a ton of them where just being creative in how we use and combine the tooling is going to be pretty material. I mean, I think for the largest enterprises and the largest brands and the largest agencies, there is a more primary issue of getting all your data foundations in place and putting AI capability into everything you do, driven off of a data foundation. But for a lot of us in a more tactical application and a closer knit one, a less sort of enterprise architecture application of AI, it comes down to where are the use cases where we can combine the tools in new and creative ways that generate process optimizations, and at the end of the day, deal with the those costs, the risks associated with executing processes at scale. And I think there's a ton of places where immersion capabilities in AI can be used. A lot of unrealized potential there, particularly in the visual content area. With images and video, as well as text. And yeah, I mean, it's an interesting time to be alive, that's for sure. It's not boring.
I think you just hit the nail on the head, because we did talk a lot about text, which is where all the hype is going on around, of course, because that is the first easily achievable target. But like you mentioned, yes, the next important things, and there's a huge potential out there. If you can convert images, you can translate these images, then video, and then of course, obviously audio. There's a lot of huge potential out there.
Exactly.
Beautiful. I think great having you on our podcast. Any closing remarks or key takeaways that you could give our audience, and maybe a few references or how they can get to know more information about Motion Point?
Well, I mean, yeah, so to sum up, we do website localization. Website localization is twice as hard as you think it is, but it's an area we've spent a lot of time developing tooling, technology, and a service offering around, and we'd love to be able to engage with anybody who has that problem to address. And we know we can sort of add value there in a sort of easy-to-consume, concierge way. We as a company are very motivated to stay at the bleeding edge of the tech here. It's interesting, I think, that really the sort of first place that Gen AI technologies and transformer models had their birth and their resonance within the translation industry, and probably the translation industry is still at the forefront of mm-hmm. the usage of these technologies. We're always looking for ways to add value to our customers, given our competency in these areas. And you can find every information you need about that at motionpoint.com.
Beautiful. Thank you, Stefan. Thanks to be for your great insights on the website translation services with Motion Point.
Anytime. Thank you, Bobby.
I hope you have enjoyed this podcast episode 82. I believe it's an enlightening journey that we had in this episode 82, delving into the transformative world of AI-driven translation with our esteemed guest, Stefan Tyler, the Chief Product and Technology Officer at Motion Point. I myself learned a lot during this conversation. First, I would like to thank Mr. Stefan for sharing his profound insights and expertise, giving us a deeper understanding of how AI is reshaping translation and localization in today's global landscape. Then, of course, as always, I thank you all, the Extra AI audience, for joining us in this fascinating exploration. Your curiosity and engagement is what makes our journey into the world of AI even more exciting and rewarding. As always, I'll be tagging Mr. Stefan Tyler on our LinkedIn post. So if you have any further questions, feel free to reach out to Mr. Stefan directly. Alternatively, you can reach out to me, Raghu Banda, on my LinkedIn profile, and I can put you in touch with Mr. Stefan. As always, you can also reach out on my other social media channels, like my X handle or Twitter handle, RK Banda. And you can also alternatively go to our website, extraai.com, xtraai.com, where you have you can find tremendous amount of other episodes or other conversations in the realm of AI, where we discuss a lot of different topics. Now, a quick sneak peek into next episode. Let's gear up for another intriguing episode of 83, where we will be diving into the realms of encryption and AI for digital equity with the innovative JV from ThioTech. You will get to know more about him in the next episode. It's said to be a thought-provoking session, unpacking how AI and encryption are pivotal in advancing digital equity. So stay tuned and don't miss out on this upcoming episode to deepen your understanding of AI's role in creating a more equitable digital future. Thank you for watching episode 82, and we look forward to having you with us again on Extra AI. Until then, have a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are tuning in from. Happy predicting the future with AI technologies. Thank you, and bye-bye now. This is your host, Raghu Banda, signing out. Thank you.